So now for the life, liberty, and happiness part.
Okay, so this course has this name for a particular reason. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. And the one we want to focus on today is this part, the one that says Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech or of the press. Okay? This is a really, really remarkable thing. This is really remarkable. You know, if you, you're in Turkey. Anybody ever been here? Anybody ever been to Turkey? Turkey's a very nice country. It's very Western. I've spent some time there. It's a mixed culture. It's not this culture, but very technologically advanced, very sophisticated. You know, if you say Ataturk was an idiot, you're going to be thrown in jail in Turkey. Ataturk was the founder of the modern Turkish state. And insulting Ataturk, who's been dead for years, is a serious crime in Turkey. Okay, so the notion that we built into our own laws a provision that the government can't stop you from saying anything is quite a remarkable thing. And by the way, this applies to the states. You know, there's no dodge. The Commonwealth of Massachusetts can't make a law. Harvard could make a law. I could say in this class, no insulting Harry Lewis, or I'm going to throw you out of the classroom. And because we're a private entity here, might not be a very wise law for me to make in this little classroom. And, you know, people sometimes misunderstand this in other ways. You know, if the president of Wendy's exercises his constitutional right to free speech by saying he loves McDonald's hamburgers, he's likely not to last as president of Wendy's very long, but he won't be thrown in jail. The government won't prevent him, but, you know, have some private constraints on what he can say. This is the Fourth Amendment. The right of people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Okay? So what this says is that, the government can't search your property without getting a court order, a warrant, and the warrant has to say what they want and why they want it. The police simply can't break down your door or knock on your door or lots of other things. But how does this apply to, I'll just pause for a moment. So how does this apply to bits? How does this apply to, you know, if you're, if you've got paper records in your house, police need a search warrant to come in and search them. But what if Ken sends an email to me? Can they intercept the email? And we're going to talk about some of these. So the world is, there are wiretap laws. But wiretap laws were kind of written up in the days before bits. This is not funny. Well, we're gonna get to that in a second, but I want to talk about where this came from. Okay, because this is also a pretty, all of these laws that restrict what the government can do are peculiarly American, not uniquely American, because your whole European rights area as well, but they originated in a different place in America, and it's important to remember why. Okay, who's this guy? Jefferson, very good. And what did Jefferson write?
Declaration
of Independence. Okay, there we go. Quick review of the Declaration of Independence. When in the course of human events, becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another. A decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes when they impel them to the separation. So when you throw over a government, you have a moral obligation to explain to people why you're throwing the bums out and going to take control of your own government. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and they are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Not happiness, in spite of the title of the course and the book, but that was just too much to squeeze in. Okay. So that's the part we typically remember about the Declaration of Independence. But most of the Declaration of Independence is an indictment of King George. Right? That's mostly what it is. It's a bill of a list of the insults that he had visited on the colonists. Long train of abuses and usurpations, despotism, history of the present king of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having the direct object, the establishment of an absolute tyranny. There's a fight against tyranny. He's made judges dependent on his staff. He's on his will. He's erected a multitude of new offices. Imagine anything worse. A big government bureaucracy. That's a good reason for throwing over a government. Sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance, like break into their houses and take stuff. That's what they were doing. Okay, so that's where the Fourth Amendment came from. Kept among us standing armies, you know, affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power so they could do anything they want. Okay, so this is all the background. Okay, who's this dude? Michael Chertoff, class of 75 at Harvard College. Okay. He looks like a nice man, doesn't he? He wouldn't do anything bad to us. Okay. So he issued an order. This is just we're just doing another case study here. I don't have any particular thing, but this is one that's under wide discussion now. He issued the following order to the border guards who, maybe some of you have already experienced this if you've gone in and out of Canada or some other foreign country, about what the government is allowed to do as you bring computers in and out of the country, even if you're a U.S. citizen. Okay. So this policy sets forth the legal and policy guidelines within which officers may search, review, retain, and share certain information possessed by individuals who are encountered by customs and border protection at the border. That's the official name of the border patrol. In the course of a border search, and absent individualized suspicion, that is to say, we don't need to explain why we want to look at your computer, officers can review and analyze the information transported by any individual attempting to enter, re-enter, depart, pass through, or reside in the United States. Okay, so you carry a computer into the U.S., and the government, according to Mr. Chertoff, has the right to seize it and look at everything that's on it. Okay, so this is a bit of a disputed question. Civil libertarians feel that this is inconsistent with the Fourth Amendment. And there's a whole set of gray areas in between. Okay? So the government also assumes the authority to look at the bits crossing the border if they're going in some of that fiber optic cable that I gave you. Okay, this created a very interesting situation. Are you actually Canadian?
Yeah, I really am.
You really are?
Really?
No? Yeah. But I was just saying, there was an interesting Canadian story about this.
I've lived in the United States since I was six.
No, that's all right. Okay. You don't need to apologize.
No, I'm Canadian trained. We apologize for things that are our fault.
A Canadian university decided to cut its operating expenses by giving all its students Gmail accounts instead of running their own email servers. Okay? And then somebody woke up and figured out that all of the emails were being inspected by the United States government as the bits passed from the Canadian university to the Google servers and back.
So they're just being screened, they're using some sort of heuristic method to be able to screen them for certain phrases or whatever they want.
And part of the trick on that question.
So that doesn't fall inside that clock.
No, this is actually one step beyond this. This says you can physically seize the computer, or when made, I don't know which direction you think of, whether it's better or worse, but you can physically seize the computer as it crosses the border, or you can just seize electronically the bits as they cross
that
the border.
That doesn't extend to bits crossing across internet.
No, that's a separate object in a person's possession,
so it's right. The same.
The logic is here. Look, American border guards can inspect your luggage. Why shouldn't they be able to? They can inspect your papers. Why shouldn't they be able to inspect your hard drive too? Yeah.
But I think it was actually one step beyond simple inspection. It was also that they required the user to log into the computer with their username and password.
Okay. So let's do this. I think this is the last slide, and then we'll talk about that. Officers may detain documents and electronic devices or copies thereof for a reasonable period of time to perform a thorough border search. The search may take place on site or at an off-site location, so they can take your computer away from you, which, like in my case, would be my life, with the stuff that I've got on my hard drive. Officers may encounter information in documents or electronic devices that is in a foreign language and or encrypted. To insist Customs Border Patrol in determining the meaning of such information, CBP may seek translation and or decryption assistance from other federal agencies or entities. Officers may seek such assistance absent individualized suspicion. So this is like in-your-face statement that thing in the Fourth Amendment about probable cause does not apply to us. Okay? We're
U.S. citizens.
Right. I mean, it was one thing if you only did it to Canadians, but, you know, here we're talking about... So now you raise an interesting case here. There was a gentleman who crossed the border with his laptop. A border guard opened it, saw some child pornography, allegedly, and arrested him or detained him or something like that. When they went to open the computer the second time, they discovered that he'd logged out. And they needed his password to get back and get the evidence with which to prosecute him for the crime. And without the password, or maybe it was an encryption key, I'm not sure which, they had no evidence except the statement of the border guard, but that wouldn't be sufficient, you know, in the court. So this created a very interesting situation. Because, you know, they said, tell us your password. And he said, no. Now, does the government have a legal right to require him to divulge his password? That was the position the government took. And I believe that case was actually decided in favor of the defendant, that he did not have to disclose his password. That as long as, I mean, if he, you know, they could get a search warrant and search his house to see if he had it on a sticky, you know, somewhere, or, you know, tucked into his wallet or something. They can do all that kind of search, but they could not require him to disclose it from the inside of his brain. But, Tyler?
This has been changed in UK law recently, within the past year or two. So where people, if they're served with a warrant, they can be compelled to reveal the keys or to log in, or alternatively reveal their password. And if they don't, there's a very stiff penalty that you can go to prison for. So
yeah, but you see, so this is a very interesting. This is, I think, an interesting difference between, you know, the U.S. and Europe, and including, interestingly, the UK, because our whole system of government was premised premised on the theory that you can't trust the government. The whole government was set up on the premise that you can't trust the government. That's what that whole Bill of Rights is about. Right? They've got to prove why they need certain things. And they can't stop you from saying anything. And, you know, you've got a right to say what you want. And if the government wants something from you, you should be you should expect that they have to tell you why and what. Okay? And this is all very much the combination of the digital explosion and the war on terror is really stretching some of these assumptions, you know, to the limit and beyond. So there's a lot of court cases constantly going on in this area, and we'll be seeing a number of them.